Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Getting hot this afternoon in North Carolina. Spring is coming. We're going to talk a little spring training on Baseball America. We're going to talk a little top 20 rookies, and we'll take a lot of your questions. As always, you can send questions into the podcast at podcast@baseballamerica.com. I want to remind you that our 2012 books pretty much
probably
all out.
The easier way, just tweet us.
You can tweet them, but I do get the emails. I do get the. I used to get a lot of emails at the podcast.
Now we
really
get a lot
push
of tweets.
It. Well, we just don't push it very much. So podcast@baseballamerica.com, where you can always send the questions to us via Twitter @baseballamerica. We're over 50,000 strong at J.J. Cooper.
51,000 strong.
I know you're at J.J. Coop 36. I'm at John Manuel B.A., so we'll take some of your questions right out of the gate. Our 2012 books are just about all done. Directory's the printer. Directory will be done soon. Super Register went to press, I believe, this week. And that will end book season at Baseball America. So another exciting book season.
Which means that spring training is here.
That's
right. Pretty much those coincide.
That's right. Book season ends and actual games begin. And looking forward to seeing some. Obviously, we've had the college games start, but we're looking forward to just seeing some spring training games. And today we had, I guess it was the first game. It's the Phillies against Florida State. And Florida State held that game scoreless into the sixth inning before Scott Posednik put the Phillies ahead. And I was like, wait a minute, Scott Posednik is on the Phillies? I had no idea. So
that sounds like I'm going to just guess minor league invite with a minor league
but he's got a
contract
better
with an invite. To
better shot of making the team, I think, than Dominic Brown right now. The Phillies,
that may
seem
be true.
The Phillies seem very intent on Dominic Brown starting the year in the minor leagues, J.J. And go ahead.
Prospect. When you talk about prospect fatigue, the Phillies seem to have Dominic Brown prospect fatigue.
It's really strange because 2 years ago when they called him up, it almost seemed like it was too soon. And now I think the biggest problem for Dominic Brown is that he just doesn't fit. You know, when they had Jason Worth and they had Worth, Victorino, Ibanez, it seemed like it would just make sense if he could replace Ibanez. But Ibanez still had the 2011 season on his contract. Worth did not. Worth becomes a free agent. And then they really just weren't. They were just too left-handed. You know, so that's why you saw Ben Francisco get at bats, and then John Mayberry Jr. makes more sense, and they, you know, Charlie Manuel kind of fixed John Mayberry Jr.'s Stanford swing.
And the reality of it right now is that John Mayberry had a good enough season last year that it makes sense that they're planning to count on him more.
And John Mayberry Jr. is just a little bit better. He is better at defense because he's less raw, he's more refined. As big as he is, John Mayberry even filled in center field for them, which I don't think anyone could ever have imagined his dad doing. I think it would be kind of funny to have watched his dad play center field. But I think those things made a difference. He's a more well-rounded player and a right-handed bat. And, you know, so I kind of wonder, I think from a fantasy perspective, Dominic Brown is not worth having. I still think if you're in a keeper league and you can keep him, I still think there's a big league future for Dominic Brown where he's going to be a productive big league regular.
It just may not be in Philly.
I think an above average big league regular. I think he's a great piece of trade fodder for that team if they have infield injuries. And considering all their infielders are over the age of 30, I expect them to have infield injuries this year. That wasn't even a question, but we do have several questions on the Twitter. I'll go ahead and start, JJ. Let's this issue will be our Major League preview issue. We're wrapping that up tomorrow. We'll have our top 20 rookies in there, several features. But this question goes to our top 20 rookies list, JJ. Reggie at Gopherballs asks, Addison Reed's role in the White Sox bullpen. Sounds like Robin Ventura is not necessarily – well, he's far from handing the job to Addison Reed. It's not like Addison Reed has a shot to earn a
right.
spot in their bullpen, but he's – not going to close for the near term.
Which could be the first 2 weeks of April, if anything like last year when the
exactly.
White Sox. Sergio Santos was not being handed a job at this point last year.
He had about as much professional experience pitching as Addison Reed.
Right.
You know?
And actually less, I think.
Yeah. He had a
but
year.
But if you think about it, this time last year, Santos was talked about as being a part of their bullpen. And, well, Matt Thornton was going to be the closer. And it took about 3 weeks, I think, is what it was, before they realized, wow, their bullpen's in trouble and Sergio Santos can fix it. So I just think the talent's going to win out, and
right.
I think that when you look at the talent in their bullpen, there's a pretty good chance that Addison Reed's going to be, by at least midseason, going to be their best reliever.
Yeah, his competition, at least for right-handed relievers, is like Yan Marinez, than they got from the Marlins.
Who throws even harder, but has way less idea of where it's going.
Correct. Gregory Infante, who's similar, hard thrower, not much of a clue. And guys like Dante Heath. You know, I'm not a big Dante Heath fan. Anthony Carter. These are all guys that Addison Reed.
These are all fringy guys, to be honest.
That's it. These are all guys who you hope they throw really hard, so you hope you catch them lightning
in
a bottle.
The best way to put them is to put charitable is they're cast-offs. They are guys who you take flyers on. Almost every one of those guys you just mentioned is a flyer.
Yeah,
they picked them up from someone. And
I think
Infante
they developed, but the rest of those guys are not.
Dante Heath, the Braves were okay with saying goodbye to him.
Right. Nathan Jones, I didn't mention him, is another guy who I don't think has any experience over A-ball and really does throw hard, but not really – there's not a lot of competition there for Addison Reed.
And I just think, again, the talent's going to win out in that case. And especially as a reliever, a rookie reliever can step in and be pretty good right away.
Yeah, I think so. And I think Addison Reed is prepared for that. I mean, he's prepared for some spotlight. He's I think he's not an ideal number one prospect to have, but I don't think he's a bad number one prospect either. I think he's pretty good. I think he's got a chance to be a good big league reliever.
With the White Sox, before all the trades, where it really was bad is when you got from number two on.
Yeah, number two was Trace Thompson. Even after the trades, I mean, it's not like Nestor Molina and Simone Castro are great
still,
shakes.
Yeah, that's not something you're going to be saying, man, that's awesome, but it's still better than it was.
Let's go to Doug Plord, a longtime BA podcast listener and fan. Appreciate all the compliments Doug threw our way after the last podcast. After reading Ask BA this week and seeing that everyone had Barnes in their top 150, was he a last-minute cut? I guess he's talking about Harrison Barnes. No, I'm kidding. I'm still in college basketball mode.
But Red Sox right-hander Matt Barnes.
Matt Barnes. And I
UConn's
wouldn't say he was a cut.
Matt Barnes.
He wasn't a cut, but I think Jim explained this well in our top 100 podcast, JJ, because he's just a hard guy to rank because the Red Sox list really crunched on Matt Barnes.
Well,
it was very difficult to figure out where to rank him.
Jim says, in hindsight, he ranked Barnes. He got locked in on Barnes, is how he describes it. Like, when he was doing the Red Sox list, he really, in hindsight, liked Barnes a little better than where he ranked on the Red Sox list. But the problem was, take it a little deep into the analytical of how we do this.
Yeah, a little granular.
I'll get granular here. With the BA grades, he ranked them, and then he put BA grades on them.
Right.
And when he put the BA grades on them, he really kind of wanted to put a higher grade on Barnes, but he also wanted, I think it was Iglesias, that he wanted ahead of him.
No, it wasn't Iglesias. I think it was Bryce Brentz. Bryce Brentz.
Okay.
Iglesias was outside his top 10.
Okay, sorry, it was Brentz. So he wanted Brents ahead of him, and that kind of locked him in a little bit as far as what grade he could put him on him. And then, like, in hindsight, looking back on it, how Jim's made the point is he said, you know, there's not a whole lot of separation between Barnes and that second group. Not the Trevor Bauer, Garrett Cole group, but that second group of 2011 college right-handers who are ranked ahead of him.
Taylor Youngman, Sonny Gray. Jim thinks he's closer to those guys, and Youngman and Gray both made the top 100.
And Barnes did not.
Now, Youngman rated significantly ahead of Barnes in our top 200, like, you know, 8 on our overall draft top 200. I think Barnes was right after Sonny Gray, and there is, you know, a decent amount of scouts. I'd still say it's the minority, but there's a decent amount of people who think that Sonny Gray is a reliever, not a starter. So you could make the argument of Barnes ahead of Gray. Obviously, we feel the consensus is Gray ahead of Barnes, but there's not a huge difference between those two guys, JJ. And you could definitely make the case that Barnes could have made the top 100, but I think in the college context, we would say pole mechanics is kind of what kept him out. But really, top 10 mechanics, in a way, kept him out. I think we all would have felt uncomfortable jumping Matt Barnes ahead of three other guys who didn't on the Red Sox top 10.
Bryce Brentz was not a top 100 guy right now. I don't think.
Yeah, not for me. Brandon Jacobs was more of a top 100 guy.
Right, I would rather have Brandon Jacobs than Bryce Brentz on that list.
And I like Bryce Brentz.
That's nothing, but
I like saying Bryce Brentz.
But another way to put it is that one other thing to remember with this, and we love the top 100, and we love the fact that people get fired up about it, even to the point of how's this guy 88 and this guy's 92.
Loud noises.
But do remember, especially at the back end of that list, If you're saying one guy's 10 and one guy's 50, oh yeah, we're saying there's a difference.
Right.
If you say one guy is 95 and made it and one guy's 105 and didn't, we're not saying there's a whole lot of difference there.
Right. I am noticing, now that I'm looking at this, I don't think we looked at this in the meeting, that Jed Bradley, who made the list, but is left-handed, ranked one spot behind Matt Barnes in our top in our draft list. And then Daniel Norris at 16 also made the top 100. So maybe if we had that little nugget, if we'd remembered that nugget
of information.
But again,
it really part of it was, though, is it was going to be difficult. It's like, then really what...
Bradley did go ahead of him in the draft.
Bradley went ahead of him in the draft. And beyond that, again, it comes back to, okay, well, did we rank... Are we jumping him over several guys who, when we did the Red Sox... Not that we don't ever do that, but there were several guys ahead of him on the Red Sox rankings who weren't going to make it.
Right.
So we were essentially going to be redoing our rankings pretty significantly.
Kind of had a similar thing go on with the Blue Jays top 10 and their players. You could certainly make a case for... Like, Justin Nicolino didn't make the top 100. He came close. Mm-hmm. He got support. I like Justin Nicolino. I like Drew Hutchison a lot. We had Nicolino at 4, Hutchison at 9. Their grades are very similar. But we really...
I think we're both on the Drew Hutchison fan club.
We both like Drew Hutchison. But I can see why Nicolino ranked ahead of him. I can see why a lot of the guys, Noah Syndergaard, ranked ahead of him. I understand that from an upside standpoint where I think Syndergaard's and Nicolino probably both a good 3 years away. I think Drew Hutchison might be a big leaguer this year. You know, I would have liked to squeeze Drew Hutchison into the back of the top 100, but he would have been skipping basically five guys.
And that's tough.
And they were top 10. So when you're putting together your own personal top 150, it's hard because I think you want to respect the other rankings we've done. And we want to try to stay somewhat consistent.
Right, and we can't stay 100% consistent. And the reality is that we right now, spring training started, we are getting more information. It's funny. I know I am the Anthony and I've been the anti Anthony Rendon guy in the office. I'm higher on him now. You know why? It sounds crazy, but he showed up to spring training and he is playing.
Yeah.
That's one thing I just wanted to see.
You see they're working him out at shortstop? He's playing second base, shortstop, and third base.
Which, well, I the thing about it is that I know I love the, when they talked about, you know, well, maybe Rendon moves Zimmerman off of third. Since when does Zimmerman, I know he's getting older, but I just don't see Zimmerman moving off of third.
Well, he did have some issues last year defensively where he was kind of messing around with his throwing mechanics.
Right, but
and so he made some errors. I guess the other thing is he is a much bigger guy than I think we think of or we remember.
No, but I remember him being big, but he's always just been...
He's agile.
He's agile. He's a guy who...
He's 6'3", 230, though. You know, that's a big dude. I mean, he's basically evolved into the next Scott Rolen. Scott Rolen's 6'4", 240. You know, I remember when David Wright came up and I had some scouts, or we saw, I don't even think it was scouts. I don't remember where the first comparison came from. Probably from their statistics of David Wright to being compared to Scott Rolen. I remember throwing that at a scout and saying, well, maybe the numbers, but you can't compare them because
one guy's just...
David Wright's 4 inches shorter and 40 pounds smaller. I mean, Scott Rolen's a beast. You know, he was trying to make the point of the physicality
and you gotta
of Scott Rolen.
A true athletic beast, like
right.
A Division I basketball player.
Right, and that's what makes – and that's what
I
that
almost
was Scott's point.
I got to watch
point.
Scott Rolen play in college. But
he would have gone to Georgia with its storied basketball tradition. Yes. Vern Fleming, the Neek,
Dominique Wilkins,
Alec Kessler.
And that's it.
That's it. It ends with the Neek pretty much. I do respect Vern Fleming, that he kept the Tar Heels from going to the Final Four in 1983. But I digress.
That is the highlight. You have just hit the highlight in Georgia basketball history.
Yeah, I don't like that one. Anyway, that's not on Jim. That'll be Jim Callis' Twitter page next week, just to tweak me. But a couple of years ago, Zimmerman hit 33 home runs. 2 years ago, 25. Last year, 12 when he was injured. I think he actually has enough bat to move to first base, which is amazing.
I'm not saying he doesn't.
I just think it's amazing because he was thought of as a glove first gap hitter, 15
right.
to 20 home runs guy when he signed. He's been better than that.
Right, but that being said, he's been better than that, yes. At the same time, to me, you move him to first base, and especially when you talk about NL first baseman, he becomes, at best, an average first baseman. If you look at the NL. Like we talked about Ryan
Howard. They just lost their two best first basemen.
That's true. Well, they all keep going. They all keep going.
Yeah.
He's talking, okay, excuse
me.
Let me rephrase this. When you talk about first baseman around baseball in general, he'd be an average first baseman because the AL is
I still think he'd be above average. I mean, 142 ops plus is his career high.
That's his career high.
And he has a couple 130. Well, he's had a couple injuries in there. I just navigated off his page. But, I mean, he's not Joey Votto, but at the same time, so it's a 120 ops plus for his career. I still think that's above average, but I don't think he'd be even for first base.
My point is to me, if you've got a guy like that who I really think can handle third base,
sure,
and you've got another guy who can handle second.
It's an interesting discussion because Rendon, the question is, can he handle second base? And I just was talking to a scout yesterday who thought, as an amateur, that he never thought Anthony Rendon would stick at third base. The reason he didn't like Rendon is he didn't like his lower half. He didn't like his feet. Thought that he'd have to move out of the infield. Then you have other scouts, and you know, Wayne Graham swore up and down that this guy would, you know, play wherever you wanted him to defensively. And the early returns in spring training are Anthony Rendon's hands look great to David Johnson. He's praising his defense, you know, his defensive tools. So I still think moving to second base, and physically, he's more of a second baseman. He's
right,
like 5'11", 6 feet tall. And he's more of a third baseman or second baseman than he is a first baseman. I think that's where I'm going is that's not the ideal utilization of Ryan Zimmerman's physicality and combination of athleticism and size. But I would see Zimmerman more at first base and Rendon at third. And I would see Zimmerman at third and Rendon at first.
One other thing, just talking about the Nationals in general, going forward, the other thing is that you could map out a scenario where Michael Morse, Jason Wirth, and Bryce Harper all in the outfield together.
Ooh.
But I think you probably are better off with Michael Morse being your first baseman.
Don't forget, 2 years from now, Jason Wirth's contract really kicks in because it's backloaded. And it gets to $21 million a year in each of the last three seasons.
Well, the good news for that is that it'll just be with Vernon Wells at the same time. Wells' contract will also be still going.
The Nationals will be hoping that Tony Regans gets a general manager job between now and then. I'm not sure what their other options are there. And Jason Wirth's spring training already off to a bad start. He's got back spasms and
he's not
missing
the best shape
workouts.
Of his life.
I guess he's not in the best shape of his life. But that was obviously a good question because it spurred some discussion. Jim Goulart, at Moose_Haas, who's I believe runs BrewerFan.net, if I'm not mistaken. If he doesn't run it, he writes there. Jim asks, are organizations too quick to shift middle infielders to second base permanently? Brewers didn't even bother to begin Scooter Jeanette at shortstop. I think in general, organizations try to leave guys at shortstop as long as possible. Like, say, the Twins are going to play Miguel Sano this year at shortstop in the Midwest League, so they say. And, you know, he could probably – he's like twice as large as their last shortstop at Beloit. He could fit three James Beresfords into Miguel Sano.
He may literally be twice as large.
I mean, he's not twice as tall because Beresford –
but he is twice as
heavy. He's like three times as thick as James Beresford. I think James Beresford could fit inside the thighs of each of his trousers. And then, of course, they used to have Chris Cates over there as well, who was literally half his size at 5'3", Luke Van Mills' former favorite teammate. They're going to keep him at shortstop as long as they possibly can.
Right.
Most teams do that, JJ, I think.
But with Scooter Jeanette, okay, you want the explanation?
Sure. I think that's what Jim wants.
Okay, the explanation to me is that, yes, teams do a lot of times do that. At the same time, you also want to make sure that a guy can handle the position that you see him eventually playing. And in Scooter Jeanette's case, I think the Brewers looked at him and said, he's not going to be a shortstop long term. So you can do it the other way, which is we want you to master the position that we feel like you're going to play.
And I think there's a lot of
merit
to that.
And also, it also comes down to somewhat the reality of it is that it depends on your organization situation too.
Right.
You're part of it. I mean, nothing against Scooter Jeanette. Scooter Jeanette is a solid prospect. He is a gritty guy who always produces.
He's gritty and gutty.
But he's not a guy who an organization says, we can't move this guy because he's the cornerstone guy.
I mean, the main thing is
Miguel Sano, you don't move yet because the reality of this is that Miguel Sano, you don't hold Miguel Sano back because we got to get this guy a B's at this.
You it say, is a little apples and oranges. You're right.
With Miguel Sano, you say he's going wherever he needs to go, and we'll move the other guys around. Because that's one of the things that goes on with this is that teams don't publicize it, obviously, but they have internally, they do it different ways, but there are guys who basically the path is clear for, and whatever this guy needs to do, if he's ready to move up, he's moving up.
Right.
There are other guys for whom, if that other guy's moving up, I don't care how good a year he's having, we're going to have to figure out what to do with this guy because this guy's going to have a clear path.
And the other issue there to me, Jim and JJ, is that you don't want a guy learning a new position in the major leagues. So I do think you want that experience as much as – yeah, exactly. What was it? Was it third base the first time he'd ever taken?
First time he'd ever played third base in a pro game was in the big leagues. And, they never had a ball hit to him,
that's
so it
right.
worked out. But
I also liked one of my favorite stories is the 2000 Olympics, you know, Tommy Lasorda, where Adam Everett was the everyday shortstop on that team. He got one day off. I forget who they were playing, but Gookie Dawkins, everyone's favorite Gookie, Gookie Dawkins was playing shortstop that day. And Adam Everett was told he was going to be put in the ninth inning as a defensive replacement. And Ray Tanner, his coach at South Carolina, was the associate coach. So he threw BP and did some other things pregame, but during the games he's had to sit in the stands. By that time, I'd moved to sit where Dick Cook and Ray Tanner were in the stands. And Adam Everett looked up at Ray Tanner and said, "Third base? They're putting me at third base." And Ray Tanner said, "You'll be fine, you know, nothing to it. You could do it." Of course, the first ball's hit right to him, but Adam Everett, being Adam Everett, made the play because that's what he does. He's
right,
a defensive wizard.
You
and now I think he's like a special assistant somewhere.
It sounds funny, but the way I put it is that if you've ever played baseball at any level, you have some understanding of how difficult that is, because there's like things you have to sit there and all of a sudden, if you're shortstop all your life, and it's not just the ball being hit to you, it's not just making the throw from a different angle. It's also, okay, there's a bump play. Where do I go?
Yeah, exactly. Or, so much to know.
You know, okay. Ball the outfield, you know, to the right field. Okay, there's things you have to know that is second nature to you at one position.
Right.
And at another position, you're tentative.
And that's it also comes up to me with Jesus Montero. Everyone talks about just moving into first base. It's just much easier said than done.
There's
He's
a lot
never
of
played
things,
it in the minor leagues, JJ.
But because you can say, yes, you could put him out there and – most guys are athletic enough and capable enough of putting the foot on the bag, holding the glove up, and catching the ball.
Right.
But there is a lot more even to first base than that. Okay, wait, where am I supposed to stand here to be, you know, fast guy on first? I'm trying to hold the runner, but at the same time, a situation where, okay, when do I make my break back? All those
He could
things.
Certainly go play it right now. He just would play it really poorly. You know, no one's saying he couldn't go play it, but if you wanted to play it well,
then you ideally want him to play it some before you just say, hey, here you go.
Absolutely. We've got another question that's from Zukaus10, Robert Zukowski. How big of a leap could Ronald Guzman make next year, and where would he rank compared to recent Dominican guys? Guzman, of course, was the one of the Rangers signees.
And one of the – probably by Ben Badler, who's our international amateur expert – one of the two or three easily best guys in last year's July 2 class.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, like, he was a well-rounded player, potential five-tool type of guy. What do we rank him, 12th, I think, 13th in our Rangers top
and
30?
And again, this is one of those reminders that 12 or, you know, rankings are not all equal. Like you say, oh, he's 12th in that. You know, that means y'all must not really like him. No. In the Rangers system, that means you're pretty good.
Yeah, that was a pretty good system. We're your number 8 prospect, although he probably should have been 6th by the grades, where your number 8 guy makes a top 100 in Christian Villanueva. I'm sure there's one or two other occasions
But
that's the one that jumps out to me where the grades did not line up.
I'm pained.
I think, because there are 900 players graded.
I'm pained.
I think it's pretty awesome if you only missed one. You should not be pained.
One.
You should be proud. But if you only missed one, I think you should be pretty proud of that. But, yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like Guzman could be a guy who – I don't know if I'd say top 100.
I don't think the leap's this year. I think the leap's 2013.
That's right. I don't think
– I mean, the leap – if you're hoping for a leap from him this year, it's – the best way I can put it is think back – and Miguel Sano made the leap, has kind of halfway made the leap already.
Right.
Well, that's what you're hoping for if you're a Rangers fan with Guzman.
That's a good comp.
Not physically, not anything like that, but just kind of the progression you're expecting there.
I think calling him five tools a little bit too much because we have him as a below average runner.
He's a hitter.
But he's more well rounded than Nomar Mazara, who I think we have as an all bat.
Right. He's a more well rounded guy.
Yeah.
Him and Eulio Hernandez probably the two best hitting, outfield hitting prospects in that group from last year. Got another question here. Fantasy Guideline asking us, can the Reds really be the NL Central favorites this year after last year's showing?
I think absolutely.
I think it was Jerry Krasnick, or I don't know if it wasn't Jerry, I apologize, but tweeted out today, a scout said, that the Reds are his sleeper team, and I'm thinking,
how are they?
That's not a sleeper. That's, like, if you consider that the Cardinals are the world champs and the Brewers were, a playoff team last year. That being said, if you take Albert Pujols and Prince Fielder off of those teams,
exactly,
they've taken a pretty significant step back.
There's no doubt. I mean, I like Aramis Ramirez as a free agent signing, but he's not Prince Fielder.
He doesn't fill
the
void.
It just completely changes the whole dynamic of the Brewers. And the Reds got better. The Reds had a great offseason. They gave up a lot for Matt Latos, but I think
They gave up a lot that wasn't going to actually. The reality is those guys weren't going to help them.
They didn't subtract from this year's team.
Right. You can maybe say down the road. But the 2012 team, none of those players was probably going to play that significant of a role for them.
And then Ryan Madsen, I think, is a tremendous sign for a one-year contract. And I guess the big question, JJ, is what are they going to do in left field? It sounds like they're trying to do a lot of things other than give the job to Chris Heisey.
And the thing about that is that the one that's kind of this year has not gotten that much attention after getting a whole lot of attention last year because it's not as important, not as vital, is what's going to happen for Aroldis Chapman.
Right.
And the Reds are actually – I'll be interested to see if they are willing to do this because it makes sense. They need to try to make Chapman into a starter this year.
I think so.
They don't need him for the pen necessarily. They have a very deep – adding Madsen means that they look like they have a very – Sean Marshall, who they just signed to an extension.
That's the one. Getting Sean Marshall makes it that Aroldis Chapman –
why do you need a second –
does not need to be in the bullpen. That's right.
Dominant your hope is Chapman would be a dominant lefty out of the pen. Well, you got a guy who you're just locked up through 2015 who you say maybe you're closer down the road. So with all that being the case – really, I'll be interested to see what the Reds do is because it's hard to send a guy back after he spent pretty much a full season in the big leagues, which Chapman did, pretty much did last year.
Right.
But that being said, it really makes sense to me for them to say, if it takes April, May, and June in the minors to have him ready to help us as a starter in July and August and September – well worth it. Well worth it because, again, the Reds made the playoffs 2 years ago, and that was pretty much all they could hope for because they had as uninspiring a group of starting pitchers as you could have for a playoff series where you're facing like Roy Halladay.
They had a lot of nice number three starters.
And number three, you're being charitable because, like, Edison Volquez that year wasn't a three. He would have been, but that year they were hoping to win a lottery ticket with him. Like, okay, maybe he'll have an outing where it all comes together.
Bronson Arroyo was a four. Johnny Cueto at that time really wasn't ready to be
in
front of a rotation.
The key is that if you could get Chapman, and this is asking a lot, but if Chapman by the end of the season could be a three for them, then the idea of Cueto, Latos, and Chapman, that could be a scary rotation in the playoffs.
Really what they need is Aroldis Chapman to be able to put it together once a week, once every other week even would be acceptable for them in the postseason because they don't need him to be at the front of that rotation. That's what Latos is for, and that's what the maturation of Cueto has given them.
Right, so. And so you don't need that, and the thing about it is they don't need him to pitch every fifth day in April necessarily because that's why they've got Mike Leake, who had a solid season last year.
I did forget
the reality is that they're going to throw Bronson Arroyo out there every fifth day. For a little while, at least, probably.
Homer's still there.
Still there, and
has never quite taken that next step, but he's still Homer Bailey. They do also have Andrew Brackman in camp. on the 40-man roster. I had forgotten about that. As Baseball America's foremost Andrew Brackmann advocate, I will wear it on Andrew Brackmann.
This actually will be a nice segue into our next question, okay. Which is, so you are ready to kind of not completely, but he's lost his.
I will say that
the shine is off the
contract never helped. But my biggest concern for him always was the makeup, the contract, and being a Yankee with that contract placed a lot of pressure on him. I just didn't think that he wanted that kind of pressure. So yes, I've cut bait on Andrew Brackmann.
That's a segue into our next question, which is from Brad Swanson, who asks, which prospects are most in danger of losing prospect status without a good 2012? I'm guessing Aaron Hicks is one. Now, what he means by that obviously is not losing it by losing their eligibility to be prospects,
but the
guys who drop off the top 100, drop further off to the point of, okay, it's time to cut bait on that guy.
Like a top 100 guy or a top 10 guy?
Let's say a top 10 guy, because the top 100 guy...
Yeah, because Aaron Hicks didn't make the top 10.
If you're in our top 100, we don't think that this year, with a poor year, you're done as a prospect.
That's correct. That's a very fair way to put it.
Because we wouldn't rank you in your top 100 if we did.
But Aaron Hicks is a good suggestion. I mean, he's a good...
If Aaron Hicks doesn't put it...
throw out there.
The Twins are patient, and it's worked out for them in many cases. But... at some point, you are waiting for it to come together for Aaron Hicks, and it's been a long wait.
And you know, Dylan Betances is probably close to that. I don't know that he's. Well, I don't know when he's out of options. I don't think it's any time yet. We should ask Matt Eddy about that.
But, I do remember he was on our 07 top 100 list that we were.
Yeah, I mean, he's a 2006 draft. Jabba Chamberlain almost feels like he's had his whole career, and he was in the same draft class. So Dylan Betances, we've disagreed about him. We've talked about, like, I don't think he's a reliever. I think he's either a starter in the Bobby Witt / A.J. Burnett mold, closer to A.J. Burnett than Bobby Witt, but that kind of guy who walks a lot of guys but still strikes out his fair share and is effectively wild. I think he's either that kind of guy or he doesn't make it. I don't think he's Jeff Niemann, but I don't think he has the physical ability to be a guy who's going to get up and down a lot and get warm in the bullpen quick and all that kind of stuff. So to me, he's either going to be a starter or he's going to be a bust.
The funny thing about it is that I do think that for a guy like Betances, he's in the worst possible or one of the worst organizations he could be in for his development. Not because the Yankees can't develop pitching or anything like that, but from the standpoint that he's on a team, they can't just hand him 10 starts and say, figure it out in the big leagues.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll give them credit. They have given young pitchers their
chances. I'm not saying
they
haven't given young pitchers, but the thing about it is that...
They've given up on young pitchers, and you know they gave up, so to speak, on Ian Kennedy. I think injuries contributed to that, and then he's turned out to be pretty good.
I know it's spring training, but did you saw there was a story yesterday about how they're not saying that Pineda... No. We're not saying that you've got anything locked up yet.
I don't know what that's even about. I didn't see that story. I don't know what that could possibly be about. But, I mean, they obviously gave up a lot for Michael Pineda, and he was in the major leagues last year. I don't expect him to go back. But Ivan Nova got a pretty long amount of rope from the previous year, where he came up for a little bit, and then obviously last year, even when they sent him back down, they didn't want to send him down. I mean, they gave that guy opportunities, and he stumbled a little bit, but he got a chance to – develop in the major leagues. I feel like they've given guys chances. Okay, I don't feel it's the worst. Obviously, they have pressure to win, but I feel like that's a better situation than being, say, I'll pick on this team again, the Royals, and letting guys like Kyle Davies and Lou Kochaver continue to stink. You know, is there evidence that those guys ever got better? I guess there never was with Davies.
Davies with Kochaver.
I don't see it with Kochaver.
Yeah, with Kochaver, you...
So I'd rather be in the Yankee situation where you have good pitchers around you to learn from, and they are willing to give young pitchers a chance. You have to earn it. You have to earn the right to keep going out there. But if you do, they will give young pitchers an opportunity. So
you're saying if Betances does make it, it's going to be on him.
I think it's going to be on Dylan Betances, not necessarily the Yankees. But the issue with Brackmann was the contract and the scrutiny, and I thought that he was a little – he shied away from that in college. And that made me think that was a real question about his ability to be in that spotlight and in that crucible of New York. And I don't think he could handle it, even just being the spotlight of a Yankees minor leaguer. Casey Kelly's a guy, JJ, for me, who is in this mix. He's younger than some of the guys we're talking about, but I'm a little tired of Casey Kelly. I think I wrote that he was young for his age in the top 100, which was obviously a Yogi Berra-esque malapropism. He's been young for his level, inexperienced for his level.
The other guy jumps out with that is Martin Perez, too.
That is another one. You're not going to necessarily cut bait on him on either of those guys. They're not done as prospects, but boy, it'd be nice if those guys performed.
I'll throw this one. I'm the president of the Mike Montgomery fan club. I know this, but this needs to be the year where he needs to show something in AAA. That now I will say this: we had this discussion. I don't know if we'll recreate it here.
Right, it might be hard to recreate.
But I wouldn't be. You know, he needs to show something in AAA that gets him to the big leagues. Then I'm not saying that he's going to dominate the big leagues right when he gets there. I can handle a guy struggling once he reaches the big leagues. If Martin Perez, to take it away from a guy, so Georgia,
sure.
If Martin Perez has a great first half of the season at AAA. And then, from there, goes to the big leagues and gets beat around a little bit.
Right.
To me, he's taken the step forward then.
I agree.
Because the list of guys who
are
really –
major leagues is hard.
And the list of great major league pitchers who had bad adjustments to the big leagues is long.
Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Long.
Every pitcher – I mean, Greg Maddux's second year, I guess, in the major leagues was just
Tom
brutal. Tom Glavine.
I looked it up. Tom Glavine didn't have an ERA plus over 100 until his fifth major league season.
I have him now in my 2001 retro league.
So, you know, but so like there's, I mean, the Braves are obviously the great example because Matt, you know, Maddux ended up getting there, but Smoltz and Glavine both were guys who it was a struggle before it became, they became dominant. But you need to see some step forward with, I think, all three of those guys. I think all three of those guys, this is a year you need to see a sign that they're putting it together.
They're kind of like in the Aaron Hicks boat, but they're pitchers. And because they're pitchers, I think they've gotten a little bit, especially Montgomery and Perez, because they're left-handers who flash plus stuff, they've gotten a little bit of a pass. And stuff, but they get the benefit of the doubt.
They get the benefit of the doubt because also the reality of it is that, and this is where ranking pitchers is so fun and so difficult at the same time, is that you never know with a pitcher. Like, okay, if we really rewind this, right. Mariano Rivera.
Right.
Mariano Rivera coming up through the minors is not the Mariano Rivera who's the best closer of all time.
How about Tom Glavine, just to go to your point? His first three seasons, he was 31-37 with a 4.19 ERA, so it was a 91 ERA plus, and 595 and two-thirds innings, 181 walks, 303 strikeouts. That's a 4.6 strikeouts per nine ratio through almost 600 innings.
And then you remember, though, I mean, this is the story.
That's when he took off.
Hey, reaches down, picks up a baseball. Huh, that feels pretty natural. Let me try throwing my changeup that way.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a potential Hall of Famer.
I mean,
that's the difference. And that's where pitching gets so difficult and fun to rank is that with any one of these guys, it could be just, I mean, Mike Montgomery is a great example of that. If he, working in spring training today, goes out there and goes, hey, that breaking ball
grip
feels
really... That's how I want to grip my breaking ball, right?
And that could be, he could be a whole different pitcher. And that's where hitters, it's a different... Like with Aaron Hicks is not going to pick up the bat today and go, wow, the bat feels really more comfortable.
That's
I'm
right.
more comfortable in my stance.
Here's my left-handed swing.
Yeah, there
I
it is.
I finally just figured it out.
Right, that's not going to happen.
Right.
He can grind to it. He can figure things out. He can make an adjustment. Okay, I open my stance up, and I can see the ball better coming out of the hand. All things like that. But with pitchers, it's like, oh, I developed a cutter.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
a big leaguer now.
That's right. It is a little bit different for those guys. That's a good question. I like that question from Brad Swanson. Again, for future reference, I know we're not taking them live, but the Twitter addresses are at Baseball America, at John Manuel BA, and at JJ Coop 36. JJ, one other question that I passed on that Doug Plord also asked, if you had to rank the best farm system rotation, what would it be, the Diamondbacks, Tampa, Toronto? Where would you go?
So you're assuming that by this, I'm trying to take this that this is anyone in, like, it doesn't have to be a group, because the Diamondbacks jump out if that you say, okay, all these guys could be in a rotation together.
Yeah, that's how I interpret the question. For example, like the 2012 Lansing rotation, which could be pretty ridiculous.
Daniel Norris.
So you could see Norris, Syndergaard, Aaron Sanchez, Justin Nicolino. I'm leaving somebody out. But that's four pretty stout guys from their top 10
I'd love to see that, yeah. I'd love to sit on a five-game series with that.
That's a good one. I do think that what we saw at the end of the year at AA Mobile, if that group goes back to Mobile.
Or goes
up, potentially, I would guess it would be AAA Reno, which I'm almost wondering if they'd stay at Mobile instead. But Tyler Skaggs and Trevor Bauer are both in our top 13
Skaggs,
prospects.
Bauer.
Their next guy.
They took away Jared Parker, who was part of that rotation.
Look, their other guy. Do they have Wade Miley there or no? I think Wade Miley might have been ahead of them. Charles Brewer was in that group.
And you could throw Pat Corbin in that group, too?
You would definitely throw Pat Corbin in that group. He was all those guys were together at the Renaissance Fair.
Another one I'll throw out that you could see happening is AA or AAA for the Mariners.
Well, that is a good one to think about, especially if they jump.
If they jump Taiwan Walker. Let's say they sent Holtz into AA to start and jump Taiwan Walker to AA, yeah. And then James Paxton could be there, too.
Paxton made seven starts at AA last year.
So they
could. Was outstanding.
Right. Could not. I mean, there's a very good – I'd say the likelihood of that group being together is pretty small.
That would be the best trio with the least likely combination. But then Tampa is interesting. I'm not sure which one he's talking about there, but – I'm assuming it's the one that we could have here in Durham, because it's possible someone could get sent down from that sextet of starters. Not likely, but it's possible.
Highly unlikely.
But you are going to start off with Alex Cobb, Alex Torres, and Chris Archer, which is an interesting trio. Not quite the same prospectiness
but
as the Diamondbacks
hear,
we just talked about.
The point I did hear, though, made is that I heard this while I was listening to some radio show, and I think Jason Stark made the point. It's like a scout told me that, you know, the Rays have the Rays' seventh or eighth guys in their depth chart for starting pitchers. The guys who are going to be in AAA would be number three starters for our teams. And I was like, okay, I don't think that's a little strong, because I don't think
Alex Torres or Alex Cobb are number three starters.
But
they
that
are
being
like
said, I'll put it this way.
Starters.
I'll put it this way. If Alex Torres or Alex Cobb had been traded to the A's in the offseason, they'd surely be considered, battling for starting jobs right now.
Yeah, Cobb graduated to the majors. He's not in the book anymore. Alex Torres is number six in their list. I don't think there's another group necessarily behind them
that I would
of, like,
consider
lower level.
I wouldn't put it on the same par as their lower level group that would be led by Guerrero. I would not put at the same level as, say, the Blue Jays.
No, I don't think so. But a good question at Baseball America on the Twitter. JJ, we also were talking about our top 20 rookies. I'm going to go back to Mike Montgomery briefly, because you didn't have Mike Montgomery on your rookie list. I understand why you didn't, because, like you said, he could have a good year for Mike Montgomery would be have a really nice first half in the PCL and then kind of consolidate your gains and then have some success. Then spend the second half in the major league, not getting your brains beat in, but
adjusting
to the major leagues and
postings. Let's say like posting 450, 460, where you go, hey, there were outings where he looked really good, and there are other outings where he looked like a rookie.
That would be successful.
And I didn't think of that as being, when we do our top 20, you know, I think of it as I'm trying as much as I can to replicate what I think our postseason top 20 when we're
right.
done with it will be.
Which is and so the preseason list.
I'm a little heavier on relievers, I think, than other guys because of that. Because I realize, to me, if you're trying to replicate it, we always have a lot of relievers on it because that's really one of the easiest positions to actually succeed as a rookie.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable. If I can use this word, bias, to put into your top 20. We're also usually biased toward. Usually, we're going to. It ties in and go to the better prospect.
Oh, yeah.
Even if we don't see in February that guy's playing time. Mike Trout is exactly where I was headed. We wound up ranking Mike Trout pretty high on our list. But right now, JJ, it's really hard to see where he plays with the Angels.
But really what comes down to is you just figure that a team that looks at it as they're competing for a World Series, you know, they're planning to go to the World Series right now.
Right.
I don't care how much money you've got tied into guys. If you look around at the end of April,
yeah,
and Vernon Wells is the same Vernon Wells that he was last year.
He's not in the best shape of his life, but he has completely redone his swing working with Rudy Howard.
Maybe, you know, hey, if he has a strong April, it's a different story.
Right.
I think he's got about a month to where you say at the end of that month, they've got enough money to basically, and I know, it's what, 3 years left on that deal?
I think it's 3 years and $63 million. They might have to eat a lot of money.
But if that's, they're not a team who's going to say, well, let's just keep throwing them out there.
I'm almost surprised that Jerry DePoto, well, I guess they did try to get a little bit involved in A.J. Burnett, but like, where else could they go? What's another, who's the Carlos Silva contract out there they could trade for, you know? Like, that was one
right
of my
now
favorite
you have
trades.
To hope, right now you have to basically hope for some player. If you're the Angels, you're hoping for some player to go nuts on his manager or something somewhere. You're hoping he's Zambrano's. I mean, that's what you're hoping.
That's a good verb, Zambrano's.
That you Zambrano your way. It's like, okay, we'll take you, and then we'll eat it, that contract and do whatever we have
to. We still ranked the Trout up pretty high, but Bryce Harper's other, you know, top prospect who figures to lose his rookie eligibility in 2012. He's a really hard one to get a handle on, JJ, just because, first off, he's not going to play the whole year, more than likely, because they're going to want to keep his arbitration clock from starting. B, just how good is he going to be as a 19-year-old? We've got recent evidence of other 19-year-olds who were uber prospects, guys like Justin Upton, guys like Alex Rodriguez, who came to the major leagues as teenagers and struggled before they really did figure it out. But
that being said,
is he much better than those guys?
I looked this up. Because he can play the entire year at 19, right?
Right, yeah. It's an October birthday.
I'll throw the trivia question out for you. I did get this eventually. I'll tell you, 24 home runs is the record for a teenager in the big leagues.
In a season or just
a
as
season,
a teenager?
In a season.
Is it Tony Conigliera?
You are correct.
All right.
Mel Ott second with 18. Now, here's the thing. I mean, partly that jumps out like
Mel Ott.
You're at the end of the 10. You get to double digits, you're top 10.
Correct.
So the point is that how crazily tough it is to succeed in the big leagues as a teenager. But it also jumps out. I'll say this. If Bryce Harper makes it to the big leagues at the start of May, he's hitting double digits in home runs.
Yeah, I don't see him hitting fewer than 10 home runs otherwise.
At 24... It would not stun me for him to basically we Matt Eddy made this point in our rookies meeting. Could you see him having a Mike Stanton half? Well, yeah.
Absolutely. That was a great comp. A Giancarlo.
Giancarlo Stanton. It was a Mike Stanton half at the time.
That's right. That's changed now. But yeah, I mean, to me, it really wouldn't shock me if Bryce Harper went out there and hit 240 or 250 as a rookie, but threw in 20 home runs.
Oh, and it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me. I'll even go down to like that he hit a 210, 220.
Right. I don't think he'll struggle that much.
No,
but
with the power to where you're like, especially when you look at the other options that the Nationals have out there, that they go, no, we're riding this.
Right. Absolutely. That's the reason that he should not start the season in the major leagues. I don't think you want him to start in the big leagues so that if he struggles so much, you have to send him down because that would be the worst thing. Once he's up, you want him up to stay, you know. You don't want to if he's hitting 210, that's not good enough. He needs to go back down probably.
Right. The thing you have to worry about with all this is, and this was what the Diamondbacks had to decide with Justin Upton. At some point, you go, okay, he's hitting a .188. Is it time for us to send him back down? But then you are kind of stuck in some ways because you've already told him, no, we think you're ready. And it's tough to be told to tell a guy, you know, no, you're not.
Speaking of guys who were rookies last year, I've got one more Twitter question, then we might wrap this up. But Nick Aquanark, at Aquanark is his handle. Will Desmond Jennings be as good a player as Carl Crawford at Crawford's peak? JJ, that's a pretty lofty comparison because Carl Crawford was just an impactful. He was kind of like early career Barry Bonds without the power. You know, left fielder with speed. I know that's a very different player. It's not a Hall of Fame player, Hall of Fame caliber player. But so, you know, otherwise, I mean, he did pretty much everything you want a guy to do.
But there's a –
I think they're different kinds of players.
I was going to say, to me, they're different kind of players because the key thing is a lot of Desmond Jennings' value, not yet, but at some point in his career, is going to be tied in the fact that he's a center fielder too.
Yeah, although he won't be yet. Right, not yet.
But eventually, and that's where if you said how he could have a Carl Crawford value, the best way to put the thing that jumps out to me is that, you know, we have, if we don't have the biggest Mike Cameron fan in the world in this office, we have one of the biggest Mike Cameron fans in the world.
Yeah, Connor got to espouse his, just exclaim his Mike Cameron fandom 2 weeks ago on the Baseball America show on MLB Network Radio when that was the night that he announced his retirement, and I was in D.C., but I gave him the last minute and a half of the show basically to just talk about how cute Mike Cameron is.
The thing that jumps out is Mike Cameron, in the grand scheme, is a very, very valuable big league player, mainly because, I mean, really, if he was a left fielder,
right,
he'd have been, But because he played a good center field, that added so much value for him. Desmond Jennings, I don't think, is going to play center field to that level that that Mike Cameron did. But if you said, I don't think he's going to necessarily be able to match everything offensively that Crawford provided. But when you throw in the fact that he could play a very solid center field on top of that, that kind of means that I think he could have the same value overall, because it's more valuable to have a useful offensive player as a center fielder than a left fielder.
I think Jennings could be a better player than Crawford. I think he's exhibited over the course of his minor league career more patience. I think he has more power. We saw him for a couple years in Durham. The first year he had the hand injury in 2010, the ball did not jump off his bat. He clearly wasn't right. 2011, first half of the year, you could really see the power, and he showed it last year when he first got to the big league. He's got to show me that he could make the adjustments, because the second half of his big league stint last year, he really did kind of struggle down the stretch. But to me, Desmond Jennings has more upside than Carl Crawford. He's not as athletic, but I think he will play center field eventually. I think he'll be an average defender in center field. I think he's going to have above average power for a center fielder. I don't think he's going to steal as many bases as Carl Crawford, but I think overall he's going to be a little bit more of a well-rounded, complete player. And Carl Crawford at his peak was a pretty outstanding player. But Desmond Jennings, the one issue for him has been he has been a little fragile. That's it. He's been a little fragile. And we've seen with Jason Hayward, that was the one question when he was a minor leaguer, and that is dogging him in the major leagues and keeping him, you know, he had no consistency last year. He's going to be one of the more interesting players to watch.
Oh, I'll be fascinated. I'm fascinated to watch. I am fascinated to watch the 2012 Jason Hayward season.
Just the whole, the fact that he couldn't adjust to pitches above his belt. Even my 7-year-old knew last year when he would watch quick pitch, if you throw him a pitch above his hands, he can't handle it. I'd like to see him make those adjustments. I want to see him stay healthy all year. It was almost like early career Justin Morneau in some way, where Morneau was dogged about these questions of how tough he was and that kind of stuff, which obviously in hindsight was kind of ridiculous. But there were those kind of questions about Jason Hayward's toughness and ability to play through injuries last year.
Baseball's a very hard game, and there are a whole lot. Hey, he may never come back to what he was as a rookie, but you know
right.
what? I think he will. And the thing that jumps out to me is this: there's a whole lot of great players who had terrible seasons during their career.
Yeah.
I mean, Cal Ripken's a great player. The bad Cal Ripken years, still a valuable player because he was a shortstop and all. But
pretty ugly.
But those are pretty ugly. Johnny Bench, one of the best catchers of all time. Johnny Bench would have great years. Then he'd have years like, he kind of lost it a little bit that year.
That I meant to tell you, that's going to be, I'll tease this for later in the week. That's going to be my history lesson this week on the college side with the retirement of Jason Varitek. Why the Johnny Bench Award should be the Jason Varitek Award. So that's going to be an epic rant. I can't wait for that one. So I had to tease it a little bit here on the podcast. We had no idea what we were going to talk about this podcast.
I never worry about it. I never do.
And I was stressed about it. So great stuff. Thanks to all of our listeners for the great questions. Again, you can send those in the future, podcast@baseballamerica.com or on Twitter.
And just to give you a little, as you're listening to this, a little heads up what's coming up. We do have... We'll have the top 20 rookies coming up on the site before long. We'll have I'm kind of excited. You know, if you've got fantasy drafts coming up, if you're a subscriber, we're going to roll out we're running our position rankings
right
before the season starts. So we'll have
– And they go pretty deep. It's well beyond the top 100.
Right. I think we went 65 deep on right-handers, 40 or 45 deep on left-handers, and 25 deep on, I think, relievers and catchers. And that's the four that'll be coming out next. But
so, and that's just the start.
Right. So. And we'll do all positions. So we got that coming up as well. As normal, we have weekend preview tomorrow, which will cover everything in college baseball for the weekend and get you ready for that.
Yeah, and it's been a big already. There's been a lot of news just draft-wise.
Giolito hit 100. We had that up on the site today.
Yeah, Victor Roach breaking his wrist. So there's been a lot of news. Kyle Zimmer's breakout the first weekend of the year. So there's been a lot already happening. And obviously...
And with that, hey, just keep going to baseballamerica.com. But also, if you are on Twitter, if you are on Facebook, if you're not following us on Twitter... at Baseball America, again, we're over 51,000. We do, it's not just an automated list of links. We also will try to kind of, we post stuff during the day. Here's what's coming up on the site. Other news we've seen from other places, we try to retweet some of that too, like Sammy Solis, TJ.
Right,
we weren't the first
injury
to report that. We'll pass that on the site, though, and here's where you saw the report. Things like that.
How far are the Nationals going to fall in our farm system rankings from one? They won't do a press release the second time we do their rankings. That's coming up in the next issue 2 weeks from now, which is the minor league preview issue.
And also like us on Facebook. We also we keep things going on Facebook too. So find us at Baseball America on Facebook as well.
Great stuff, JJ. And again, great stuff from our listeners. Thanks for all the questions. We'll see you next time on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.